Honey, I'm telling you, you're asking for trouble.
I didn't have any choice. He didn't have anywhere to go.
Doesn't the kid have a mother?
Well, she lives in Hawaii.
Well, let him go to Hawaii.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Beverly Hills 90210 edition. Today's episode, Season 2, Episode 3, Summer Storm. And now, here are your hosts, Tara Ariano, Sarah D. Bunting, and John Ramos.
What? John's here. Hey, John.
John's here. There was so much chair dancing happening in this studio.
Oh, my God. I was shoulder rolling like I didn't know I could do.
Body roll.
Welcome, John. So happy to have you back after your stint subbing for Sarah. Now you get to know the joys of talking about 90210 alongside her instead of her.
Yes, the triple threat.
Before we get into this episode, we have a couple of entries from the corrections department. Number one, apparently Gabrielle Carteris was not pregnant when she hurt her leg in season 3. So something else happened to her, or that was just the story. But someone in the comments actually went to Wikipedia and looked it up. She the first time that she was pregnant was when Andrea is pregnant on the show. And then I guess she was pregnant again in 1999, but I can't remember if she was still on the show then. Don't care. We'll find out when we get there soon enough. And also from the corrections department, I was wrong about the original song at the end of the Grunion Run episode. It was not whatever Michael Penn song I thought it was. It was an Elvis Costello song called The Other Side of Summer, which I also had that album. But I remembered that being later for some reason. Anyway. Now I
feel like that's still as high on the artist being offended as the other
one was.
Maybe even more. Yeah.
You know, that's the kind of thing where he only found out that the record company okayed it like 5 years later. Was like, what?
Oh, God.
Anyway.
Very true.
Was cutting it out by hand on the masters.
All right. So Summer Storm, we have three storylines to get through, sort of. So let's get to it, starting with our C story, such as it is, which is David and Donna's Romeo and Juliet. That's pretty much the story. As you will recall, David is in the drama class with Donna and Andrea and Brenda. And they all have to do a Shakespeare scene in this week's episode. And so Mr. Suter pairs them up to do a Romeo and Juliet scene. We get to see them practicing it with Donna's crazy boobs and her weird bikini in the visual aids. They bicker. She quits. They argue about it. There's a weird thing about the timeline because someone says something about it was supposed to be tomorrow and she's in like her fourth bikini that we've seen her in this episode, so whatever. But David has an idea that will get them an A, and we hear that in clip number 2.
Oh, Romeo, Romeo, wherefore art thou, Romeo? Deny thy father and refuse thy name. Or if thou will not, be but sworn my love and I will no longer be a Capulet.
Shall I hear more, or shall I speak at this?
Okay. So,
I mean, I actually considered calling for a clip from this storyline illustrating just how goddamn bad an actor Michael St. Gerard is when he's a drama teacher.
Mm-hmm.
But then I was like, you know what? Let's not linger. Like a fart.
Well, I felt the same. Well, for one thing about Michael St. Gerard, like, I looked up his acting credits, and it's his career is basically the equivalent of, and we never saw him again. I think after, 1994, he never acted again,
as far
as IMDb has to say. But I was going to clip the part where Donna tells David off for being a bad actor, because her acting is maybe the worst performance that she has turned in this entire run of the show, and I'm not joking, but
yeah.
I at least gift it so you can see like her weird like karate chop movements and like I don't know, flapping at the air and mugging and
this is Tori Spelling as Donna, not Tori Spelling as as Romeo, because that was the joke they did it in drag, and there's way too much laughing. And also from a professional standpoint, the teacher cracks up like crazy, Mr. Suter, laughs like the rest of the class, obviously way over laughing considering what's happening, but also then tells them off after, like, nicely, but still it's like kind of a mixed message. Are you supporting them and confirming that what they did is okay or not? You're a terrible teacher. This is why you're only in summer school.
Well, and this is, you brought up, Mr. Suter, the fact that men played all the roles. So, mm-hmm. like, gender bending in Shakespeare is, like, a thing.
Yeah.
Which was the whole put, you know what? We need to stop talking yep. about this. Let's move on to the B story.
That's way too much. All right. So our B story is Kelly has a crush on a boy who seems bashful and then a question mark. if you've enjoyed that volleyball B roll, there it is again. It's now been in every episode of season two so far. And we open on Kelly in this storyline in her opening credits bikini. She's hanging out with Jackie, has to stop her using suntan oil again, just to let you know how long ago this was. They're ogling boys. Jackie is co-ogling with her. There's talk of you can still afford to be picky, so that we remember Jackie is, you know, in her 40s and therefore is a complete dried up husk of a crone in Beverly Hills / America.
Her yes mother line to Kelly was A+, though. Yeah. When Kelly's telling her to put more like suntan lotion on.
Yeah. So Brandon catches Kelly staring, stops by to chew gum in her ear and find out what her target is. And it's this kid named Kyle Connor, who is played by David Lasher, who was in a lot of these kind of teen shows at the time. She gets him to come over when the ball rolls to her, literally, and she Mae Wests a promise out of him that he'll give her some private lessons. Steve Sanders is shiny as hell as he's watching this whole thing jealously.
Jesus.
Then we finally get to their volleyball lesson, and if you listen carefully, you might be able to tell when the problem starts in clip number 3.
Ouch.
What's wrong?
Oh, I don't know. I think I hit the ball wrong or something.
Well, just shake it off.
It hurts.
Let me see.
That's much better.
You know, you have beautiful hands.
I mean, I'm just saying that's not something that you hear a guy notice ever much, usually, in the straight department. Spoiler alert.
Oh, yeah. No.
Okay.
No argument here. Not to derail the non-gay subjects, though, I realized, though, in the premiere that Kelly, like, made a meal of talking about how she plays volleyball every day.
Yeah, that's
and
true.
Now she's like, volleyball, I hit it wrong.
I didn't even...
Volleyball's hard.
Yeah.
I didn't even think of that.
Unlike your teacher.
Unlike your teacher, indeed. There's more talk between Kelly and Jackie about boys and stuff. And then, finally, Kelly... extracts a date out of Kyle. They end up on the beach, and we hear what happens in clip number 4.
Kyle, is it true that you're dating a girl at Beverly Hills High?
We broke up.
How come?
It was getting too serious.
I can relate to that. Do you want to have some fun of the not-so-serious kind?
Like what?
Follow me. Woo! Come on, Kyle, don't be shy.
What are you doing?
Little. Yeah, woo!
She strips and runs into the ocean, obviously.
Kelly, you're gonna freeze out there.
Oh, no, I won't. I'm not gonna get my hair wet unless you come in. Come on!
Forget it.
Give me a towel, would you?
Also, he looks disgusted.
Seemed like a good idea at the time.
Look, Kelly.
That's okay. There's a lot we can do on dry land.
She tries to kiss him.
What?
I'm sorry, Kelly. I'm not into this.
What do you mean? I thought you liked me.
I do, Kelly. You're great, but...
But what?
I don't know. I mean, you're coming on pretty strong.
Okay. Guess Steve was right. So you're totally playing mind games with me, right?
Look, Kelly, I'm sorry if I gave you the wrong idea.
What did you expect me to think? You asked me out here. You're fine. I feel like such a fool.
Kelly, I'm sorry.
Just take me home.
John, do you want to describe a little bit the moment that you gift from this scene?
Yeah, I was just going to say, if you check the visual aids, you will see 5 seconds of Kyle's unmitigated silent movie horror and seeing Kelly naked. It's really over the top. He's like, you'd think he's watching someone being
eaten by a shark. Yeah, it's like her leg is floating up on shore and be gnawed off by a great white. And also, I'd just like to add on a totally semantics note, only on primetime dramas do people bang on and on about feeling like fools.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody talks like that.
No.
I feel like such a fool. Like, take it easy, Crystal. You'd actually say is that you'd feel like an idiot.
Or an asshole. I mean, not that you could on Fox.
Or just plain stupid.
Yes.
Yeah. Although I will give it up for Jenny Garth in there. I think she's pretty good in just showing that she's hurt and played for a fool.
Yeah.
I could hear the air quotes you were making, so well done.
There was a gesture, I guess.
So the next day, Kyle is out for a jog on the beach, and Steve in his half shirt and short shorts, visual aided. Don't worry.
Who's the gay one here?
Seriously? Steve falls into step with Kyle, and they have this exchange in clip number 5.
Kyle, I hear you had a hot date with Kelly last night.
So?
Well, moonlight on the beach, fireside picnic. You made all the right moves. Did you go for it?
Yeah, we had a good time.
Oh, yeah? How good?
Hey, man, ease up, all right?
I'm just curious. You guys make a great couple.
We're not a couple.
Hold on a second, handsome. You mean you passed up an opportunity with Kelly Taylor? What happened?
Nothing. All right, Steve, nothing happened. Is that what you want to hear?
I mean...
Yes.
Yes.
It is. Why is Steve being such a felonious cretin about it? I mean, I know it's Steve, but dude, if I were Kyle, I would seriously run 90 degrees in some other direction.
Or at least tell him, put on a whole shirt before you confront me. This is not appropriate.
Or maybe not tell him that.
Are you are you going to run to your cabana and jerk off after this conversation? Jesus. Gross, dude.
Yeah, so there's some more back and forth among the three of the players of, people blaming people, people needling people. Finally, Kyle gets a moment alone with Kelly, and they make peace in clip number 6.
I'm sorry about what happened. I didn't mean to insult you or hurt you.
Oh, look, I came on too strong, right? Don't make this any more embarrassing for me than it already is.
Kelly, believe me, it's not you. I mean, I think you're beautiful.
But I'm not your type.
I don't even know what my type is. Maybe I'm still thinking about my old girlfriend. I don't know.
So where does that leave us?
I really like you, Kelly. I want us to be friends.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, big.
All right.
Okay.
Kelly, I think you're beautiful, like an Eames chair. Anyway.
Oh God!
So she's happy that the door is still open to something, and he invites her
the back
to
door.
Perhaps. So he invites her to come to a volleyball game that's broken out later, and she does. And Steve is also in the game on the other team, and he is punitively rough. We're supposed to think with his volleyballing, to the point where she has to yell at him for whatever, setting it so hard. I don't know volleyball terms. Also, who cares? And then so Kyle intervenes on her behalf. Steve tells him if it's too rough, she shouldn't be in the game, and then snaps. I'm not even joking. There's a gif in the visual aids, really confused about where the story is going, even knowing how it ends. And then finally, Kyle gets so mad at Steve that he runs across the beach and tackles him, as we hear in clip number 7.
Mr. Macho, right? You take a cheap first shot, and you can't even make it with Kelly Taylor? What kind of guy are you?
For your information, Steve, I was with Kyle last night, and he was wonderful in every way you can imagine.
I don't know how helpful this is to Kyle, but in Kelly's defense, she doesn't really know his story yet.
Yeah, and make it? Hey, 70s guy.
Can we talk a little bit about Kyle's appearance, too? I mean, it's not that he's not cute in a very certain high school way, but he's very young looking. He's very like Karate Kid-esque.
Kind of, yeah.
And given that like the male ideal as presented from the show is like Brandon and Dylan and Steve, who probably have an average age of 35, it just seems weird for Steve to be calling him Mr. Macho for one thing, and for Kelly to be interested in him. I don't know. It just, the whole thing reads kind of false to me, but
yeah.
Well, he is the school's star wide receiver.
Right. A football player, also 5'4".
Like, yeah, well, high school, whatever. But she does have a history with football players, I guess. I mean, it isn't great, but she had a major crush on one. And we heard about it in the Slumber Party episode. Am I remembering that correctly?
Yeah. So. Yes. Yeah.
To tackle Steve, he had to get a running start of about 100 yards.
Oh, God. I tried to gif that, and it just didn't work out because, like, Steve's expression, like, trying to get... Oh, my God. It was amazing. He just looks completely, like... It's very vaudeville and funny.
Yeah. Yes, because, Kyle gets him completely off guard, and he lands on his back. It is funny. But anyway, you can see it in the episode if you must. And then finally... Kyle finds Kelly again after she's just bearded for him, and we find out what his actual deal is in clip number 8.
Kelly, about the other night, there's something I want to tell you.
Look, you don't owe me any explanations.
It's something I've never told anyone.
What?
Kelly, I've never slept with a girl before.
So you're a virgin. It's no big deal.
No, you don't get it. Look, Kel, I've never slept with a girl before. And I don't know if I want to.
You mean you're gay?
Thank you.
No. I don't know, Kel. I just know that I wish I would have been attracted to you. My life would be a lot less confusing right now. I don't want anybody to know about this, all right?
Sure, I understand. Why are you telling me this?
Because I trust you.
Oh. So the other night you were just kind of testing yourself?
Yeah, I guess so. That's why I picked the most beautiful girl on the beach.
So... I mean, it's not like you were turning me down or anything, right?
That's right.
I can handle that.
And they now, wait a minute, they do see him again. This seems seems like another, and they never saw him again, but actually.
I believe he's taking steroids the next time you see him, but he's there.
Yeah, I forget if he's... I don't think he's in any more of the summer episodes, even though he's supposed to be around the beach club. But yes, he definitely is in the steroid episode. So congratulations to Kyle for breaking through and being the only more than one episode character who came into the Niners' lives to teach them about shit.
Except, did he? Like, what's the... He doesn't exactly say anything.
No, that's true. But it was a different time. I don't know. Like,
you have to wonder how this was originally written, and then they were like, yeah, no.
I mean, especially if they couldn't even let teenagers have straight sex around this time and it not have horrible consequences. So this is probably pretty progressive.
Yeah, I actually give the show some credit for this, for the way the scene turned out, even if it wasn't completely, you know, the way it was envisioned or wanted, because I don't know. I just really like Kelly's attitude, you know, like some women would take this as a personal slight on their femininity, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a type that does that. And
I never understood that. It was like, if you're gay, you're gay, and it literally has nothing to do with me. Right. That's the point.
And right. I like that Kelly's just like, well, if he liked boobs instead of hands, he'd be into me, and, you know, I'm awesome, and what else matters?
I agree. Like, it's very true to Kelly's character, including the part where she's volunteer bearding for him, which is, you know, that's a nice move. She doesn't know what his situation is and whether that's something he would want or not, but it's good of her to stick up for him to Steve, who's just being...
And to stick it to Steve.
Yep.
I think that was her primary motivation, but I'm fine with it because he was being a complete creepola.
He was. So, moving on to our A plot, Dylan and Brenda and their pain. So, we start off with Jim getting ready to go on a business trip and a little season two twincest from Brenda and Brandon in clip number 9.
I still can't find my blue shirt.
Honey, I'm sure I saw it in your drawer.
No, I already checked.
Dad, actually, I wore that shirt to the beach last week.
Brenda, why do you have to wear my shirts?
Because they look great.
Girl in a guy's shirt, Dad. There's nothing like it.
She's not a girl. She's your sister.
Oh, my God.
At that time in human fashion history, I constantly pinched my dad's shirts and sweaters.
Me too.
Constantly getting yelled at.
Yeah, me too.
But
same.
If Brenda wore it to the beach last week, did Cindy see it in the drawer in like March of 1989?
I'm sure.
Did she not do the laundry all of a sudden?
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. Like, really? Four adults?
Yeah, and the girl in a guy's shirt comment. I'm trying to put in the pyramid, like, who it's least appropriate to say that in front of the three family members that he says it in front of. And I can't really figure it out.
Yeah, it's a three-way tie.
Also, presumably it was a dress shirt, so why was it in a drawer as opposed to hanging up in the closet? Just saying.
Another good point.
Anyway, they're sitting in front of the news, as they never are, so you know something important is about to come on the TV. And sure enough, Jack McKay has been arrested. So Brenda, he's still played by the old Jack McKay, as you can see in the visual aids.
I think that's a second Jack McKay.
Oh, really? It's not even the same one from...
Still not giant pants Jack McKay.
No. It's not that guy. But I
think,
couldn't...
Yeah, I think this one is younger than the one who was in the... potted plant episode in the first season.
Yeah.
Can we refer to him as Jack McA, Jack McB, and Jack McC?
So then this would be Jack McB. But we don't really see him because he's, you know, he's getting perp walked on TV. So he's got his hands in front of his head, sort of, as I recall. But anyway, you can see it in the visual aids. So Brenda, of course, even though she and Dylan have broken up, has to call him and listen to his terrible, new, insufferable answering machine message in clip number 10.
Hi. You know what to do after the beeparoni.
We're keeping that in the show somehow. I'm not sure.
You should make it. I mean, if people have the technology.
Ads, we ever get ads on this show, that'll be our, and now.
After the beeparoni.
Hi. You know what to do after the beeparoni.
The beeparoni. You know, I got sick once eating too much beeparoni.
It's not healthy. They tell you that it's made
you
with real
your
vegetables.
Beeparoni.
I think beeparoni is what Kramer fed to the horse in that Seinfeld episode.
Everyone is concerned about Dylan. Of course, Dylan is Dylaning around, trying not to let anybody help him, and except for his surf buddies who don't even know who he is or probably his last name, as we hear in clip number 11 horribly.
Well, mystical surf wizard, what does your wisdom tell us about these massive sets of destruction?
I think we're in for a serious pounding. Anybody who would go out in them has got to be loony.
I just left the music clue extra long so you could hear how there's a total lack of transition from danger music to everything's fine music. Typical, terrible, early 90210 music cues. That's Dylan and his nameless surf wizard friend being douchey on the beach. And then he gets pounded, as predicted, and ends up in the hospital, which is where Brenda and Cindy find him because they're his emergency contacts still in clip number 12.
You look like an angel.
I called you last night. Why didn't you call me back?
Couldn't talk to anybody.
Not even me.
I'm sorry I didn't answer the phone.
Dylan, does your dad know?
Yes, lawyers were here earlier. Somebody had to give him permission to treat me. I need you, Bren.
I know. Everything's gonna be all right. You're gonna be out of here in no time.
Don't leave.
You need your rest. The doctor said so.
Brenda?
I love how tragic she is. This is so perfect for Brenda's character because she loves the drama so much. And this is like drama on steroids.
Especially since this hospital, like, they sent him to, like, Beirut General. First of all, she just walks
yeah,
in
like
the
triage.
Ambulance bay. Yeah, it was like a MASH set. And then she comes out into a hallway that is clearly not connected to this unit at all. And then, this is in the visual aids, there's some bro with, like, some weird, like, bloody folded paper towel eye patch thing who's being questioned by the cops. And Brenda, keeping in mind also, she walks in through the ambo bay and then just like does the widow's weeds on the beach walk like very tragic stalky up to his bedside, like, just get on with it. Like, it's very weird and cheap and weird.
Yeah, the guy in the visual aids seriously looks like he has a maxi pad like backwards on his eye. You've got to check it out.
He totally does.
So, as Sarah mentioned, Brenda leaves their tragic kiss situation, goes out to the hall where Cindy is waiting, and finds out what's going on in clip 13.
Well, doctor said it's just a mild concussion and a few cracked ribs, but they want to keep him here for a few days because there's no one to take care of him at home. So I told them we'd take him home with us. Dylan and I broke up, remember? I can't have him living in our house. Brenda, I couldn't just leave him here alone in the hospital. And he's Brandon's friend, too.
I can't have him living in whose house now, miss?
Also, the fuck you wouldn't. You would love this.
Of course.
Like, I would totally. This Absolutely. Would have been bunt nip at this age. Like, give me a Brit. This and in the next episode, like, their whole weird push-me-pull-you relationship is so odd. Like, it's so strange to me.
I made the point in my notes that even Angela Chase showed a lot more grace when Sharon came to stay with them after her dad had a heart attack.
Yeah.
And she had reasons for that to be awkward, unlike on this show.
Yeah, exactly.
But then again,
in Brenda's, like, slight defense, Brandon being friends with Dylan trumps all, so he's obviously the more important child.
That's true. I didn't even think of that, but you're right. She gives Cindy a death glare that would seriously get me slapped into next week if I ever tried to pull it on any of my parents. So you can see that in the visual aids, too. Speaking of things that would get me slapped into next week, let's hear clip 14.
Oh, Brenda, would you take this up to Dylan for me, please?
Sorry, Mom, it was your idea. I'm not going to play Nancy Nurse.
Brenda.
What do you want, Mom? First you and Dad tell me not to sleep with him, then you tuck him in the next bedroom?
Are you seriously not going to bring a fucking tray of food up to the guy that just got out of the hospital? What is your problem?
She might fall on his dick. You know how that tends to happen to her.
It's over the top. And Nancy Nurse, come on. You must know who Florence Nightingale was.
Well, she's not making you wear, like, the sexy outfit. It's not like that scene in The Sopranos where they send in a stripper with the nurse's outfit on. Like, calm down.
It's
You're
a
bringing
sandwich.
A tray of food.
Like, settle down.
Although, again, in her slight defense, like, Cindy did make a really nice meal. It's not a casserole. Maybe right. She's jealous, but...
Yeah, true. So then it's Brandon's turn to chat with Dylan about his situation, and we hear that in clip 15.
Guess a couple busted ribs are God's way of telling you you're grounded, huh?
Yeah, that's funny. I'd laugh, except it hurts.
What exactly happened out there, man?
Oh, I was stupid. Tube started to close out on me, and I got jacked from behind. Should've seen it coming.
Well, you had a lot on your mind.
This has nothing to do with my dad, Sigmund.
Sigmund.
Okay.
There is more Brenda lurking around in the hallway, being dramatic in her pajamas. There's more kissing and mini fighting and what are we to each other? And Dylan's actually being very charming. And the fact that she is resisting any of this
I
is
hate to say
unbelievable.
This, he's much too teeny for me. But yeah, I probably would based on this episode until the Baja Top makes its reappearance. But anyway,
we'll get to that. So here's
also, I didn't want to clip it because we have 500 clips, but I think my favorite moment in the episode is when Brandon and Cindy and Dylan are in and just chatting about what a handful Brenda is.
Yeah.
It's just really natural and unforced, and they all seem like they're really having a good time and maybe there's like a little layer of Shannon Doherty commentary under Brenda. I don't know.
It wouldn't take long for them to have all formed that opinion about her, I'm sure. I mean, at this point, it's been like 25 episodes. They've been exposed. Yeah, there's also, I didn't clip it, I was going to, but Dylan just, Cindy brings in the tray and leaves it, and he very nicely tells her, like, it's great to be in a family again. I've really missed this. Thank you. Like, even poor little rich boy Dylan has better manners than Brenda and Brandon, who are supposed to be the perfect Midwestern scions of Jim and Cindy, but whatever. So let's hear a little bit of the latest mini fight in clip 16.
Dylan, I made a promise to myself. I need this time.
Brenda, how am I going to get through this without you? You are the only one that I trust.
I'm not ready. I need to think things out to be sure about what I want.
Don't make me beg, Bran. I won't.
May kiss again.
Dylan, I'm sorry, I can't.
Can't what?
I can't do this.
I don't know if you can hear it, but he actually goes, just kind of awesome. So after this, they both are in their respective beds, tossing and turning hornily.
It's like the contest on Seinfeld.
It's completely like that. Oh my God, you're totally right. It's exactly like that. Except everyone on this in the contest on Seinfeld wasn't sharing a bathroom, which these two are, and they both happen to go in at the same time and see each other in their night clothes. And there's a gif in the visual aid of both of them eyeing each other down, which is kind of cute. Because they both are, you know, sort of dorky. They're vulnerable. Dylan's got
his
weird...
It's also hilarious, though, because I think this is the only standing shot we get of him. So his waist is even more compressed than usual. Because
he's by the bandage. Totally.
God, he's so small. It's true. Anyway, so they manage to get through that without fucking each other. And then Brenda goes to class and has to deliver her Ophelia monologue, which you can hear in clip 17.
The sweet bells jingled out of tune and harsh. That unmatched form and stature of blown youth, blasted with ecstasy. Oh, woe is me to see what I have seen, what I see.
Yeah! Yeah!
All right, great!
No!
All right,
I don't know, Brenda,
great.
That was pretty terrific.
Nope.
You really understand Ophelia.
Maybe it's because I'm sharing a bathroom with Hamlet.
Okay, that's a pretty good line, but wow, yeah, that was a terrible monologue. Even watching it, knowing how the scene ends, because I've seen this episode 1,000 times, like, I always think that it's going to end with Chris being like, what's wrong? That was terrible.
And also, that delivery, it is a good line, but her delivery is really, like, kind of smiley and muggy, and all of a sudden she's, like, wry and ironic about the whole thing. It's like, it reminds me of, like, the Halloween episode where the Krusty doll is trying to kill Homer. And the guy's like, hey, you got your Switch set to evil. It's like, hey, you got your Brenda set to bitch. Just switch totally. It up and suddenly she's like, she's fine, you know?
Yeah. Well, she just gotten positive attention for literally being a drama queen. So maybe that kind of
put her in a better mood.
For her.
Yeah.
And who cares? Because speaking of drama queens.
Oh, God. Yes. So
Jim's home.
So Brenda goes home. No one else is there. Dylan's on the couch just hanging out. She asks if he needs anything, being nice, literally for the first time in the episode, since he blew off her phone call, I guess. And he asks her to, you know, go and get a tray from the kitchen. So she does and brings it back. And then he wants his book. And then he wants a blanket. And then clip 18.
Anything else?
Could I get a blanket? And my book's on that table right over there.
Will that be all?
Just one more thing.
What?
You?
Do you come with the book?
Ow.
I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. Don't stop.
So she crawls on top of him.
The hardest thing I ever had to do was trying to stay away from you.
They start a kissing.
God.
And then Jim comes home.
What the hell is going on?
Dad, ow! This is not what you think.
It isn't. It sure looks like it is.
Mr. Walsh, I can explain.
There's nothing to explain. except maybe why you decided to take advantage of our hospitality by taking advantage of my daughter.
All right.
Dad, it's not what you think. I was so mean to him the rest of this episode.
He finally wore me down. Dad, come back. I do like the detail. I like the detail of when she pushes herself off Dylan. He's like, ah, because he's still injured.
That was awesome.
So Jim, Cindy comes home from wherever she was, the garden center with Anna probably, and Dylan and Brenda have to stand outside eavesdropping on Jim yelling at her and making what I have called in my notes hallway eyes at each other. And then after dark, Dylan is back in the aforementioned Baja hoodie to torture Sarah, kneels by Brenda's bed to watch her like a creep for a little while she sleeps, leaves her a note that's marked, read me, as if she wouldn't know what to do with it otherwise.
In this totally dorky, girly handwriting, hey, PAs, work a little bit on, find some dude on the street and pay him $10 to write these things down.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, I can't believe I'm asking this, but where is Brandon right now?
You know,
because this is the one time where his braying could be used for good instead of evil. I mean, I feel like he could intervene with Jim on Dylan's behalf, but he just happens not to be there.
That's a good point.
That never happens. Like, he always sides with himself against both of them for putting him in a position, which is like, it's none of your goddamn business, shizness.
So Brenda wakes up the next morning, does in fact read the note as instructed, which, by the way, I was doing the visual aids for this, because so that you can see the girly writing, it is in there. What happened to notes? Do you think teenagers like write each other notes anymore, or do they just text? I feel like a million years old even asking that, but I feel like that's a relic from a bygone age.
I don't know. I mean, then why bother putting vents in lockers anymore?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, true.
Although, do they even have lockers anymore?
I don't even know.
Do children even go to school, or do they go to, like, space pods?
Also, read me. Was that an Alice in Wonderland reference? I mean, if he put her name on it, did he think she would just ignore it?
He does like to read.
I folded a piece of paper next to my clock. Oh, well.
It seems like none of my business, Kermit's teasip. Anyway, so Brenda reads the note, figures out what's, and then she has to come downstairs to scream at Jim about what it contains.
Waits to get dressed, though.
Yeah, she gets dressed
first.
Get
another silk camp shirt and camel cutters.
We hear that in clip 18.
Anything else?
Could I get a blanket?
Oops, wrong one. Episode 9, clip 19.
I hope you're satisfied.
What?
Dylan's gone. He left. Are you happy now?
Brenda!
Where are you going?
To find him. And what I do to say I'm sorry for having a father that's such a jerk.
What?
Ooh, good one. God. Also, will you be doing that on foot in Los Angeles, you dumb shit?
Yeah.
I mean, I get it, and I'm not on Jim's side, but I'm not really on her side either.
No.
Shut up.
Well, she kind of lost the moral high ground with that jerk remark. Like, he was kind of a jerk, but also you don't get to say that. You're the child and he's the parent. Like, figure out a more politic way to get your moods addressed.
Yeah, buy a gurnal and write in it.
Exactly.
Borrow some paper from Dylan's readme notebook.
Yes. So later on, Brenda's back home. She's looked, quote, everywhere, unquote. Can't find Dylan. She's looked everywhere she can walk to from there. So, like, between the house and the gas station, I guess. And then Cindy gets a call and reports what she's just heard in clip 20.
Did Dylan say anything to you two about spending the summer with his mother in Hawaii?
Not me.
Me either.
Well, after his father turned himself in, it seems Dylan's mother made arrangements for him to spend the summer with her in Hawaii. I mean, the morning of his accident, he was supposed to be on a plane. Nobody's heard from him.
Anxious strings. So
that was actually pretty smooth exposition from Miss Carol Potter.
It was, although Iris is once again mother of the year for waiting X days to call anyone about like why he wasn't on a plane, because presumably he has not called her. Anyway, where is Dylan? Well, Dylan has gone to the beach club in his Baja hoodie and sneaks into his old cabana, curls up on the couch like a baby.
Leaving the door ajar.
Leaving the door ajar.
With a Zippo lighter he has no reason to have because he's on smoke.
Yep. Puts that in a dish on the coffee table, puts his dirty shoes on a stranger's futon, And I know definitely this one was originally You Are the Everything by REM. It's subbed out for this other bullshit music. And then we get flashbacks to Tiny Dylan at the beach club. Iris, nothing like the Iris we will meet in her high-waisted chino shorts. And Jack in the ocean, swimming in white swim trunks like a fucking pervert. And you can hear some of what we hear in clip 21.
Don't drop me, Daddy! Don't drop me!
I'll never drop you, son. I promise. I'll always be here for you. I'll never let you fall. I'll always be here for you. I'll never let you fall. I'll always be here for you. I'll never let you fall.
I don't get it.
Dylan starts sobbing.
No father in real life has ever addressed his male child as son. Yeah. TV writers, you gotta stop doing that shit. They have names, use them. I am not a crackpot.
Yeah.
Oh my god. The footage is so like film that was found in the camcorder after sitting there for like 5 years.
Completely.
It's all yellowed and grainy. And I'm not saying Dylan can't have a complicated relationship with his father, but sure. Isn't this like memory a little, I don't know,
Bullshit.
Well, I mean, just in the context of the Potted Plant episode that we saw, he seems pretty estranged from him now. I don't know why he's getting so sentimental.
It makes no sense. Why we had to hear that much of that terrible music and like just fade it out. It's not the good song anymore, but whatever. So Brandon shows up. He's the first one there, just like he was bitching about in the last episode, to clean up beach garbage when he notices a door ajar, goes in and wakes him up. Finds Dylan, obviously. Dylan shows Brandon his old height chart from inside the cabana because I guess in all those years, they've never repainted between tenants.
It's in my notes.
God.
And then they walk out and leave the doors standing wide goddamn open.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess it's technically private property, but no one seems to have a problem like getting on the property when they want to. So.
Right. Plus, the tenants probably wouldn't want the door wide open like that. Although, in their defense, they didn't lock it, so whatever.
Before we leave the cabana, too,
did. He broke in with a knife.
Oh, that's right. He did. Sorry. You're right.
Before we leave the cabana, too, I forgot to say that Dylan's, like, racking crying after that horrible camcorder memory. It looks like a PA is behind the couch, like, prodding him with a cattle prod.
Yeah,
this is jiggling the futon.
he's in the fetal position a lot in this episode. I didn't mention it earlier, but we also see him, it's in the visual aids, lying on his bed, sadly looking at the answering machine when Brenda calls with his rolled up jeans.
God. Yep.
Anyway.
Check the visual aids.
Yeah, awful sheets. Really hideous sheets. So then we go back to the Walsh house, and Brenda and Jim finally have it out in clip 22.
Brenda, how many times do I have to tell you? You put the dinner plates with the dinner plates.
I know how to load a dishwasher.
And then you put the bowls with the bowls, and that way you get a lot more room. You can get a lot more in there, you know? I mean, come on, Brenda. There's a right way and a wrong way to do things.
And then there's the wash way.
Well, it works for me.
I'm not talking about dishes, Dad.
I don't get it.
So far, the Walsh way of raising kids has worked pretty well.
Maybe we're done being raised.
Think so?
You didn't have to throw him out, Dad.
I didn't throw him out.
You might as well have.
I told him he could stay until he was well.
You did not! You told him he had to leave in 2 days. How do you think that made him feel? I had to sleep on a beach.
I know you care about him.
I do, Dad. I have to help him. Please help me.
Okay. It's gonna be all right. We'll all take care of him.
We will.
You just gotta understand, Brenda. One minute you're my little girl, and then all of a sudden you're taking pregnancy tests. Things are moving kind of fast for your old man.
Well, maybe I'm not your little girl anymore.
You'll always be my little girl.
Do, do, do.
One minute you're my little girl, and the next we're standing close enough for you to cheat on Brandon with me. Not sorry.
By the way,
I actually think they did a pretty good job with this scene. Like, the music oversold it a little, and the dialogue is really cheesy, but, like, this did not feel quite as, like, smarmo as Jim can sometimes feel with the kids, especially Brandon. So, I don't know. That could have been a nice scene. It's just, like, I don't know. Like, she's being a drama queen. Just don't respond.
Yeah. Although I would have liked there to be a scene where he was like, you can't call me a jerk and then stomp out of the house. Like, I'm still your dad. But of
course, I guess it's pretty decent of him, too, not to point out that, like, 36 hours before she was like, Dylan's not living in my house.
Yeah.
Like,
you know, but, true.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, he can't ground her by taking away the car.
Right.
So he has limited options for enforcing his will. So anyway.
I would still get grounded from the phone sometimes. And I would get grounded to the house as well.
Mm. Yeah.
God, getting grounded from the phone. I imagine teenagers listening to this being like, I have no idea what you're even talking about. Also, I have had that exact conversation about the proper way to load a dishwasher with both my dad and my husband. So that part really rang true to me.
I never needed to have that conversation. I was the Brandon. I knew how to do it correctly.
Congratulations, Sarah.
Yeah.
Thanks, Dad. I guess you're a better son than me. Anyway.
My parents had that argument many times when I was a child. They're now divorced.
So Brandon...
It really is the little things.
So Brandon finds Dylan and reports that Jim has officially invited him back. And so when Brenda comes home from wherever the fuck she was, she sees Dylan and Jim talking privately. And this is a little bit of what they say in clip 23.
I'm sorry I lost my temper the other day. For a long time now, I've been the only man in Brenda's life. It's hard for me to accept your growing up.
Can I ask you something?
Sure.
Why do you always act like I'm not good enough for her?
Dylan, I haven't been very fair with you. You have to realize from where I stand, nobody would have been good enough for Brenda.
You know, they say that girls always look for guys who remind them of their fathers.
Let's not get carried away.
This makes me sad, too, because I feel like they have this, like, this conversation is, like, revisited, like, five different times. Like, they're always, like, Jim and Dylan having this, like, fight and resentment proxy cycle with each other.
Yeah.
But I sort of like their relationship right there where it's, like, awkward and Dylan's trying to be like, and Jim's like, nope, I don't know. It just seemed like a wasted opportunity to always have them, like, you know. I also feel bad for Eckhouse, who had to play, like, a different version of Jim and in this relationship every week.
Yeah. No, it's true. Yeah, and especially since earlier in the episode we had, as I mentioned, the nice gratitude from Dylan to Cindy. Like, he wants a family. He's really lonely. He hasn't had anything like this, you know, for many years as far as we can tell. So it would be nice if Jim could just be a nice paternal figure to him rather than always being the guardian of Brenda's virginity or whatever the hell. Anyway.
Yeah, I guess it's slightly weird for him, you know. On the one hand, he's, you know, his son's best friend, but on the other, he's, you know, getting it in the store. I don't know. I guess I can't fault
him. And then he's a potential client who's the son of a headline-making.
There's so many more objectionable things.
It's true.
On another note, did they have this living room before, or is that a season two addition?
No, like, they always had this living room.
The fireplace? No, they had it. Maybe it was shot from a different angle.
Brandon's big blowout, I think they replaced a lot of the
furniture. That's right. Yeah.
All right. So let's wrap it up. Jim encourages Dylan to get in touch with his dad. And so we hear his letter to Jack in the final clip.
A long time ago, you made a promise to me. You said you'd always be there, that you'd never let me fall. And along the way, even when things got rough between us, deep down, I believed you. Deep down, I don't believe you anymore. But it doesn't matter, because I still want a father. And I hope you want to have a son again. Your loving son, Dylan.
Oh, flutes now.
I hate you, but let's be bros?
I don't know.
That was kind of a letter.
I'll come to visit you, but you're not getting any money for the vending machines?
Also, was he writing with a quill and parchment? Like, That's kind of what it looked like to me.
Yeah, he unraveled some fibers from his Baja top, crafted them into a quill. Jesus.
So that's the episode. Brenda stops by to, you know, be nice, and so they end on good terms, but that's pretty much it.
And then it's all weird, like, formerly feuding co-workers who now share an experience. Like, what? Writers, please just get them back together. This is so weird. Anyway. Yeah.
All right, let's wrap it up. Episode MVP. John is our guest. Why don't you tell us who you think is the MVP of this episode?
Well, I hate to do this because it's like kissing your sister. Sorry, but I have a tie between Cindy, whose mothering I find really endearing, especially in the face of Dylan's aloofness. It only makes her more determined, and it's really cute, I think. Mm-hmm. And Kelly, who treats her, you know, now beard with kind of a fun combination of tact and bubbliness and self-interest that really appeals to me. So.
That's a good, both good choices. Sarah?
Wardrobe, absolutely subtweeting with Steve's outfits. And this won't be the last time.
Mine was Kelly, too. I like this. This is the first time we've actually seen her for all her reputation as a like man-eater. This is the first time we've seen her on a date for real, other than the time with Brandon. So it's nice to see what she's like, even if things don't really go her way, as it were. Least valuable player. John?
I mean, Jim is such a shitheel. Again, some more, but I will give a dishonorable mention to Oprah, because if she weren't so addictive, Dylan wouldn't have been down in the living room, and probably none of this would have happened.
Fair enough, Sarah.
Well, this is a tough one. Because whenever it's not Brandon, it's really confusing and disorienting. But I'm going to say the senior McKays, especially Iris. Like, bring your ass back to the mainland.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's solid.
That's a good point. Well, you guys picked two good ones, so I'll just throw in a vote for Mr. Suter for his mixed messages, terrible fake laughing, and general bad teaching.
Totally with that.
Now,
great balls of fire.
The Kim Challenge.
Mad, bad, and dangerous to know.
Five reasons from this episode, Dylan proves he is, in fact, mad, bad, and dangerous to know. John.
He is prone to falling asleep in front of open flames, and I'm not talking about Kyle, and that could get you consumed.
He's, for such an expert surfer, he takes very dangerous risks with his health and possibly those of the Coast Guard.
He apparently doesn't have health insurance because he wound up at whatever, Beirut General instead of Cedars-Sinai, where everyone on the show is supposed to go. Hello?
He might get arrested for breaking into someone's cabana. That was actually
very true.
Not okay.
He gives Hawaii a bad rap, which could offend any Hawaii natives or residents you or we might be friends with.
Well, that's five. Do we have any more?
No.
No. Okay. Well, that's it for another episode of Begin With This. Next time, round up the usual suspects. Some VCRs have gone missing from the Beverly Hills Beach Club. Plus, Brenda is the victim of a sick burn. Joining us this week, and also writing for us at previously.tv, is John Ramos, who you can find on Twitter at CouchBaron. Our fine young engineer Dave is at Glark. Tara Ariano is at Tara Ariano. And I'm at Tomato Nation. See you next time.
Hi, you know what to do after the beeparoonie.
Oh my god. Yeah, I'm with that. Good change. God.